We are going to continue the hour by talking books. Tom Maxwell is a local music legend. He was a member of the Squirrel Nut Zippers. He wrote their classic hit, Hell. He's in the North Carolina Music Hall of Fame. And now he is the author of a new book about the Chapel Hill music scene during its heyday in the 90s, A Really Strange and Wonderful Time is the title. It's out this month, and he joins us now in the studio to chat about it. Tom, how are you? Thank you so much for being with us today.
Aaron, I'm well, and I hope you are.
16-year-old Aaron is super excited. Excited that I'm sitting in the same room with you.
Oh, really?
The number of hours I sat in front of the TV watching Hell on MTV.
The buzz bin.
Yeah. I love the 90s, middle of the afternoon. Yeah. Good times.
Well, tell your 16-year-old self not to worry because you're going to be fine.
Nice. What inspired you to write this book now?
I think I had to get to the place where I had to get to the place of being able to almost separate myself out from that life experience because, you know, I was there.
Right.
And all these things happened. And at that time, it sort of felt like I was in a blender. Mm. And I was like, well, I certainly don't have perspective on this because, you know, I was over here doing this thing and boys and whatever, Archers of Loaf were doing this. And then I thought, that's not actually true. And my partner was like, you realize you're the mayor of Carrboro. Like, everyone knows you. And I'm like,
yeah.
Oh, no. Okay. Yeah. And I read this thing that I talk about in the book, this Brian Eno quote, who he's talking about this thing called senius. And I'm like, wait a minute. I lived through one of those.
Yeah.
And also, much love and props to all the other wonderful Austin, Texas and Athens, Georgia. But gee whiz.
Yeah.
Chapel Hill needs some props.
Yeah, for sure.
Especially when I was coming up, it was like, you guys are the next Athens. And then it was, you guys are the next Seattle. And I was like, no, son, we're the first Chapel Hill.
Oh, I love that. Okay, go back and talk about the concept of a senius, because you start the book with that. I'd never heard it before, and it's a really – how applicable you think it is to Chapel Hill or not, it's just a really cool concept in general,
really
like
cool
just
concept.
To start with. Yeah.
Yeah, so Brian Eno is – before he gets into Roxy Music and produces U2 records and everything else, he is an art student in London, and he's studying – Russian paintings. So there's an exhibition at the Barbican Gallery, and it's Russian artists. He's like, great. This is awesome. I know all these guys. And he goes, and he doesn't recognize most of them. He's like, what the heck? You know, all these great paintings by all these great painters he'd never heard of. He's literally studying it.
Yeah.
He goes, huh, something's going on here. And he said, and it occurs to him that there's a community. I think the way that he puts it is a community of artists who, you know, are proximal to each other in time and place, sort of in competition. They inspire each other. They borrow from each other. They steal from each other. And it's a sort of a mutually reinforcing community of creators. And I was like, oh, he's right. I don't know anything about Russian painting. But as a musician coming up in a very music sort of friendly town, I thought of all the other people who made it possible, you know. I thought of Frank Keith, who owns the Cat's Cradle, gee whiz, and all the people down at WCHL, WXYC, the college radio stations, and on and on. And I thought, that is the community. Gee, the people who came out to the shows over and over and over was actually the scene. I did the thing where I talk with Mark Klein from Love Tractor, right? Wonderful band out of Athens, Georgia. And he said something like, his quote was like, if the scene was a cold, we were the sneezes.
Yeah.
So it's almost like the scene created the bands as opposed to the way people normally think about it.
What do you think made that possible? Like, is it a place? Is it specific people serendipitously?
At its heart, it was a bunch of people who were deeply committed to an artistic scene. But
it's interesting because there were some like really prickly people in this scene as well, too, and they all just fit together.
Oh,
so
a swimming pool full of iconoclasts. and prickly is the right word. However, the things that I talk about in the book that I think made it possible, right, was not just proximity, walkability, but the fact that if you were whatever, Chuck Garrison, you could wash dishes at the Hardback Cafe, still live in town. Still be in, I don't know how many bands, three, I guess, four, however many, you know what I mean? And it was also the stuff that Ray Oldenburg calls third places, that is to say, public spaces that are not church or work, in our case, the Hardback Cafe, and a lot of places where people, Tijuana Vets, where people would congregate, interact, and just, you know, whatever, book shows. So there was a kind of a collective identity. Now, I don't, you know, you can talk about the particulars of what made Chapel Hill, what made it and what makes it, you know, so wonderful. But I think the sort of basic human sort of thing is around us all the time and happening, blipping in and out like flashbulbs. All around the world and always has.
Speaking with Tom Maxwell, author of A Really Strange and Wonderful Time, a book about the Chapel Hill music scene, 89 to 99, that heyday period, one of its heydays at least, like we talk about. I will go to my grave saying we're in another one right now.
Good.
But
Off the top of my head. Putting you on the spot.
Yeah, because there's so many. Viv and Riley, number one, they just got here. It's a lot of the bands that have like moved here in the last 15 years. So you think about like, think about like Y Oak and Sylvanesso and Blue Cactus and Iron and Wine, His Golden Messenger. I think the Epicenter's moved up to Durham more than Chapel Hill, but I kind of lump it all together in my head.
It's more difficult to separate them.
It's
really
very hard, yeah.
Although people will put their dukes up. I mean, I don't know how it is these days, but back in the day, you know, the Raleigh, the sort of like, the sort of low level tension between Raleigh and Chapel Hill. And I talked to Kenny Roby, who's great.
Who's still making
great
stuff.
Who's still doing it. Yep. And he was in a band called Six String Drag. And I was like, tell me about it. And so he does this. He has this wonderful disquisition on the differences between the Chapel Hill and Raleigh music scenes from that time. It's great.
What did you learn that you didn't know before?
Everything.
You were there. You had to have known some stuff going in.
There are so many stories that are in that book that I did not know, right? Because I just did not have access to it. And I guess on a sort of like little individual stories that are hilarious or just the gamut of nuttiness. And on a larger level, what parallel tracks we ran on where I would go like, I'm over here and I'm differentiated and I'm having this experience in Squirrel at Zippers, you know, it won't be anything like, you know, Polvo. No, I'll be honest with you. It's pretty much exactly the same in its component parts. Mm. You're still like somebody's deathly ill on the back bench of the 15-passenger van, whatever, you know, even though you make different kinds of music, the sort of mechanics of it are the same.
Yeah.
It was gratifying and it was cool.
One of the things that I've kind of like gradually kind of through osmosis picked up from hearing about the scene and hearing people talk about it, and then you did it in the book as well. Jamie McPhail has the great line about, and I've got it here, one of the reasons why Chapel Hill was such a great place was because there wasn't that desire to be famous. That wasn't what was fueling people. There's that like mentality, and then so much of the book is about the business and so much of the rise and fall of bands in the 90s was business related. Like we didn't get the record deal, so we break
Absolutely,
up and things
yeah.
like that. So there's that kind of that odd, like simultaneous but disconnect between
the two.
There's
always that tension, right?
Yeah,
between
yeah.
the very bumpy intersection between art and commerce. And I'm like, I wanted people to know for a couple of reasons. One, what an influence the industry is going to have, especially at that time when Nirvana breaks that big and all of a sudden here come the eyeballs are set squarely on Chapel Hill.
The Sony Mini Disc Festival, which I'd never heard of before.
I didn't know anything about
it. Oh, man.
David Menconi told me about that.
What an awful name for a festival.
But the other thing, you know, Chapel Hill had whatever. What was it? Liberty Records in the 1960s. Hmm. But we had a raft of indies. Merge, of course. And Mammoth Records, which vanished like a brigadoon.
Yep.
And I'm not sure that people remember them. And as insane as that time was, and as different as those two entities are, in many ways, they're almost bookends. And they all were playing pickup basketball games together. So, you know. But the business itself, I like to think that my socialist roots are showing, that I just gave the capitalist system enough rope to hang itself. And in the book, it's pretty anti-capitalist because they're, well, you know, it's the music industry, isn't it?
Mm-hmm. Speaking again with Tom Maxwell, who, by the way, is wearing his 50th anniversary Cat's Cradle shirt. Radio is not a visual meeting. I mean, I gotta shout that out.
Yeah.
You talk about so many other artists. You don't get to spend all of your time talking about yourself in the book.
Thank God.
Tell me about like your experience with Squirrel Nut Zippers and like Hell Taking Off and
that
Hot
so
being
strange.
Such a it's gotta be right.
I came up as a drummer in a town of drummers.
Yep.
So I was in my own bands playing drums with a lot of other people. It was a rock band. We do what all bands ultimately do and broke up, but prior to that, I'd been really getting into pre-war jazz. And so I got in the Zippers very early days because of this shared love that I had with Jimbo Mathis, who was in a band called Metal Flake Mother. I was also in Metal Flake Mother for a minute. Well, we were just following our own muse. So it wasn't a thing where we had some idea that we would do anything, like quit our jobs.
Right.
You know, you work in a restaurant and you play in a band, you know. People really liked the band, and we did well locally. That was all wonderful. And two FM stations, clear channel stations, put us in rotation. Mm. One was G105, which was in Raleigh, and their program director may have been the first. He just was like, I like the song, I like the band, I like your label. And he would play local stuff on a top 40 station. Crazy. Mm. And not something you did back then, because by that point, regionalism had kind of died.
Yeah. I mean, you're already saying Clear Channel there. So,
Clear Channel. Yeah. And Clear Channel by that point had snapped up kind of everybody. And there was a huge KT boundary that I talk about in the book. And the other one was KROQ in Los Angeles. Forget it. You get on K-Rock. And so all that happened made no sense to us at all. I remember the label boss coming, Steve Balcom from Mammoth Records, coming to the studio where we were making our third record. We were convinced we were going to get dropped. Mm. Why else would he come out to a session? And he's like, you have a hit. And I was literally like, what does that mean? I could not make heads or tails of it. And you started this interview by talking about looking at MTV. Mm-hmm. Buzzbin added it.
Yep.
And then it, like I told David Menconi, it was like being shot out of a rocket with a drink in my hand.
I bet.
And it went at one point, I think it peaked at 13. And at one point we were selling 30,000 records a week. I could not wrap my head around it. I guess I still can't. It's not going out on a golf course and hitting a hole in one. It's being struck by lightning. You know,
while hitting a hole in one.
Sure. Yeah. So surreal. It was strange and unsettling in a way. It was weird because I used to go get my haircut at the Friendly Barber Shop in Carrboro, and I loved it. I could be the fly on the wall and just listen to those guys talk about whatever, how they make collard greens or UNC basketball.
Yeah.
And then I became the topic of conversation for a minute, and I was like, I don't like that. You know? They're like, oh, it's you. I'm like, shoot.
Oh, man.
Yeah.
Speaking again with Tom Maxwell, A Really Strange and Wonderful Time is the title of the book. It's out this month. Where does the title come from? That feels like it's a quote.
Yeah, it is a quote.
Yeah.
Sean Rogers Nolan, I met when he was a baseball-capped teenager working as an intern at Moist Beta Breath Records, where my first band, the label we were on. And then he went and worked at Mammoth Records, and then he started managing, right? So he was Archers of Loaf's first manager, I think Picasso Trigger. He managed a few bands. And he was talking about 1992, the summer of 92, and the big record stardom convention, and this thing that we all just took for granted. Mm. You could go out your door and see three phenomenal bands every night. Mm. And if you had to pay money, it was like $2.
Yeah.
Because he's talking about going to all these rehearsals of these bands that he really admired. And he goes, these were great bands, but they were all just people you knew.
Yep.
It was a really strange and wonderful time. And I'm like, thank you for the title of my book.
Ron Liberty of Pipe / graphic designer extraordinaire doing the book cover too, which is fantastic.
Had to happen, right?
Yeah.
It had to happen. It's sort of a dream come true for me too, because of the embarrassment of riches. And I could call Ron and commiserate on a book cover, please. And in fact, you know, because it's Hachette Books and they're almost sort of too big to care. I love them. They've been great. But I had to sell them, right, on Ron, not because of Ron, but because it's like, oh no, the author has a friend.
Oh yeah.
You know what I mean? And he wants his friend to do the cover. And I'm no, dudes.
This guy's legit.
Yeah, no, yes. Seriously. Here's his portfolio.
Yep. Every poster that anyone has had done.
And his phone number.
Yep.
So you can go ahead and call it.
Again, speaking with Tom Maxwell, Really Strange and Wonderful Time is the title of the book. Got to wrap up real quick. Yeah. Of the places that have closed, what's the one you miss the most?
I really miss the Hardback Cafe. I miss Crook's Corner. I'm going to say Crook's Corner.
Okay.
I cut my teeth there, and I got a bartending gig there. And I had many infuriating and wonderful memories of Bill Neal and Gene Hamer and the beautiful people I worked with, whom I worked, and too numerous to mention, you know, but yeah.
Place, business, organization, or person, who's the unsung hero of the Chapel Hill music scene?
I consider in some ways, in some very important ways, the book to be a corrective, because there are people who, because by the nature of human attentions, are not getting the props they deserve.
Mm-hmm.
My beloved friend, John Enslin, who's still making music, is one of them. As a lyricist and front man, he is without equal. Metal Flake Mother mm-hmm. was a band that every one of my peers revered and no one knows about.
Mm-hmm.
Zen Frisbee.
I found two Zen Frisbee albums that I did not know existed reading this book. Yeah. Because it's hard
always
to find now.
To listen. Yeah. There's a lot of stuff that would just disappear without a trace.
Yep.
And so I was like, listen, let me talk about the thing. And of course, there's all the great stuff I couldn't talk about because of, I couldn't write War and Peace. But there's a lot of stuff where I'm like, listen, this was legit. You know, whatever sort of makes it. And Squirrel and Zipper sold a bunch of records. That's fine. But that's not really what it's about necessarily, because that's the worst way to measure value.
People want more about the book or about you, where can they go?
Me, they can go to tommaxwell.com and look at that same picture that Michael Benson took that I like, thank goodness, because this appears to be the only picture of me in existence.
You find one good photographer, you
Michael
stick
Benson,
with them, yeah.
Chapel Hill native.
Yep.
And then if they want to get their mitts on a book, they can. It'd be cool if they ordered it through Flyleaf, or they could go to Hachette.com or something and find it. Just put really strange into the search bar and just, you know, bypass the weird stuff.
There you go. Bypass most of the weird
most
stuff.
Most of the weird stuff.
And there's one right in the middle that's going to be fantastic. A Really Strange and Wonderful Tom is the book. Tom Maxwell is the author. Thank you so much for being
here.
Aaron,
always a pleasure. Always. Thank you.